This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 5th, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on our agenda is the proposed final audit report on the Service Employees International Union Committee on Political Education. Mr. Silowesky and Mr. Hintermeister, please proceed when ready.
As Commissioner Bowerly just stated, just before you use the proposed final audit report for SEIU COPE, during the audit, the scope of the audit included a bank reconciliation, a limited review of occupation, name of employer, and it focused primarily on independent expenditures made by the committee. After our reviews, we discovered no material non-compliance issues, and that's stated in our proposed report that it's basically a no-finding report. However, attached, in the memo to the report is an item for your discussion regarding the transfers that the SSF made to the connected organization for independent expenditures and their disclosure.
Thank you. Is there a discussion on the report? I'll be happy to go first. Thank you for the report, and I think the report reaches the conclusions that are of the legal issue that is described in the memo. From my perspective, I'm not comfortable supporting this outcome in this report. I understand the rationale and the discussion behind the detail that was provided in the cover memo about the MERS that were looked at, the AOs that were looked at. But I'm concerned that this analysis can undermine the type of disclosure that's already required by the statute. And I don't think that the AOs are exactly on point, and this is a factual difference that is important. The statute and commission regulations require political committees to itemize any independent expenditures, the recipient of those independent expenditures that add up to or exceed $200 in the calendar year. And in this matter, unlike some of the AOs that were that the commission has approved in the past, this was not the advance payment for example, the salaries of the employees of the connected organization. Rather, these expenditures were made the funds were transferred to SEIU, who then simply paid them to other vendors, locals, that sort of thing. And my reading of the statute is that those recipients, the locals or the vendors themselves, should have been reported. And so rather than the no finding in this report, I would actually support a finding that for the 38 disbursements from SEIU COPE to the SEIU General Fund totaling over $14 million, that there was inadequate itemization and reporting of the individuals or entities who received the payment for the independent expenditures. As a result, the finding would also note that audit was unable to verify the dates of the public dissemination for the independent expenditures and the timeliness of any 24-hour or 48-hour notices or the use of proper disclaimers. And so I would, in that finding then, if were that to be adopted, I would assume that there would be additional reporting that would be required to fix those prior reports. Again, I think this is a factual difference from the AOs that have approved some of these advance payments with respect to employees, and this is slightly different than the Mondale AO where there was a vendor involved. I agree that vendor, if you're paying to a vendor, you don't have to itemize for every FedEx payment that vendor might make on your behalf, but the vendor has to appear in the reports. Here, what it appears is that this was either an accounting or a convenience for how the money flowed to the locals and flowed out of the organization. And post-Citizens United, SEIU could have made these independent expenditures directly, so I'm not sure that this issue would arise again, but under the current regime, the bulk transfer of the money from the COPE to SEIU, in my view, doesn't alleviate the reporting issue with respect to the recipient of those funds for the IE.
Commissioner
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with your analysis. I want to emphasize that we're not suggesting that SEIU, or at least I'm not suggesting that SEIU did anything wrong, only that a fuller reporting of their activities would be more consistent with the statute and would provide the public with a better view of what these independent expenditures were all about. I think that's what we ought to do, and I would be happy to make a motion to reflect that. Oh, and I just noticed Commissioner McGann's tie. Wow, that is even better than your other pink tie. I really like that one. Just was struck by that.
We'll see.
That has nothing to do with my motion.
Yeah, we'll see what it has to do with the vote, too.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, and thank you. I'm confused. So the union didn't do anything wrong, but they didn't do the reports correctly. But isn't that something that's wrong?
All I meant to say is that it's just a reporting issue. It's not a, you know,
okay.
They didn't take in money or spend money in some inappropriate way. It's just a reporting issue.
Okay. I can't support a finding here for a couple different reasons. First, they didn't do anything wrong, whether it's just a reporting issue or not. The reports are correct. I think the auditors questioned it, took it to the Office of General Counsel. The Office of General Counsel agrees that they don't have to break down their IE reports any more than they did. There's nothing in the reg that indicates that. Counsel went the extra mile and looked at some old AOs and MERS to see if the commission had created anything new that wouldn't be found in the reg text. But when you do an IE, you have to show who you paid, and that's all you have to show. You don't have to break it down. And here, to say that they do, I think is unprecedented and is radically different than how most who do IEs think they need to report them. To use this case to impose a new rule, I think, is improper because, well, an audit is not the place to do that, particularly when you have a lot of folks, including this particular union, who do IEs, and they do it in a manner consistent with how this union did it. Simply because they're a union moving money to locals or whatnot, to me, is a red herring. It's still the same reporting regime, whether you're a party committee or a union or whatnot. And I've always thought the rule has to be the same for everyone, yet has to give enough breathing room for everyone. So I don't see this as an opportunity to create a different rule for a union because they move money a little bit differently. They have to report it differently than someone else. Two, the second issue is to make a finding is somewhat odd because I don't know of a case, and maybe there is, where the auditors are not recommending a finding, but the commission is going to insert their own finding. Generally, it's on the auditor's recommendation. We may not adopt the finding, but to undo that, to me, means it's not a question of fact. It's a question of law. So that betrays that we are talking about what the rule is. And two, to make a finding here is improper because the committee has really had no opportunity to be heard on the issue. There's been no notice on this. I think we received an email from them late yesterday that the first they heard of this was, well, then, as soon as they sent the email. Since I've joined the commission, we've spent a lot of time working through due process concerns and having an opportunity to be heard, and we've come a long way. The commission is a completely different place than it was almost 3 years ago when some of us showed up because there's a lot more opportunity to be heard, and I don't want to see that reversed by imposing a finding on an issue that, well, the committee or the union has not had a chance to really brief because, well, our own Office of General Counsel says it's not a problem. And this is not a hypothetical. I mean, if you look at the notion of due process, it applies not only in the criminal context but in the civil context. And I would suggest here, many over the years tend to make the reflexive claim that such things don't really concern the FEC because it's an administrative agency and we don't really have our own power. We have to go to court and that sort of thing. But I'm not sure that's true. I remember the case of Wisconsin v. Constantino, where in Wisconsin a local sheriff decided he was going to post on local liquor store walls who he thought couldn't handle alcohol because they were a public disturbance or whatnot. No opportunity to be heard, no charging document, no trial. He did that, and they took him to court, and the Supreme Court said, nice try. Justice Douglas, speaking for the court, said, where a person's good name, reputation, honor, or integrity is at stake because of what the government is doing to him, notice and an opportunity to be heard are essential. Posting under the Wisconsin Act may, to some, be merely a mark of illness. To others, it is a stigma, an official branding of a person. The label is a degrading one. Now, we're not labeling SEIU an alcoholic, but in the world of campaign finance, you are branding them with a finding that really, to me, doesn't have a legal basis and for which they have not had an opportunity to be heard. And that's something we can't do. Even if I were inclined to use the audit as an opportunity to create a new rule, I certainly wouldn't do so without giving them an opportunity to at least present their legal arguments, particularly here where we already have a legal view that what they did is not a problem. And third, there's been a lot of talk about disclosure, and if we can't simply take every opportunity that presents itself to somehow make people file more detailed reports simply because that's the policy preference of the current thinking of some. The rule is the rule. The rule says it does not require them to do this. We can't do this at the audit stage. So I cannot support a finding. I actually objected to this audit report for different reasons, which was the concern that there would be things on the public record that could cause some in the public to think the union did something wrong. And I brought it to the table to ensure that it was clear that they did not, that their reports were correct as filed, and that no one can take an inference down the road that, well, the auditors may have wanted to find something, but the commission got in the way or the council got in the way or anything like that. That's not the case here. I think the rule is clear. And that's the reason why I brought it to the table, really for the opposite reason that others did. So I can't support the idea of a finding. That's my piece on this.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's part of that I actually agree with, and this comes to us in an odd procedural posture. Because there's no finding, it didn't come before the commission until this very late stage in the process, and that's why we're raising it now, because it wasn't really in front of us before this. But I think it would be appropriate to send it back, basically to return it to the interim audit phase to provide an opportunity for SEIU to brief the issue, to make a presentation before the commission if they choose to do so. I think that would be perfectly appropriate. The problem for me is that this issue, the only point at which this issue was raised to me was here at this late stage. But I think that would be an appropriate thing to do, and I'd been planning to make a motion that we include a finding, but I think it would probably be more appropriate to make a motion that we send it back to audit to prepare a report that would be effectively an interim audit report that the union would then have an opportunity to respond to, because I think that point is entirely well taken. Not that I expect that you're going to support that either, but, I think on the procedural grounds, you're right.
Commissioner McGann.
I appreciate that. And a lot of the procedural changes that have come in have been commission-wide, and I'm not taking a bow solo. We all take a bow for much of this. Particularly, Commissioner Walter has had quite a few good ideas on this front that I think has made things better. Here, though, there's not. I don't see a legal. I guess we'll see how the votes go, because at the end of the day, I would be prepared to, with a few modifications to make sure that the final report's clear, support the report that's in front of us. Now, if there's not enough votes to close the file, then I guess it does go back. I don't see why we would need to do that. They've already been through an audit. You know, the process is the penalty, so to speak. They've been through enough, in my view. To me, it's a legal issue. We don't have in front of us, to me, a presentation of the legal issue saying that what they did was wrong. So to give them an opportunity to respond, the question I ask is, respond to what? Because counsel is kind of agreeing with the union, because I'm not sure the union's not going to say, counsel's wrong, you're right, we should have reported it more, with more detail. They're probably going to say, we don't have any problem. So I'm not sure what they're responding to. So I guess I'm curious if given that that may end up just causing it to run around the track a couple more times and end up right where we are, is that something that still makes sense? Because I just don't understand what they would be responding to.
They would be, some of us would be proposing a finding and not making the finding, but, you know, proposing a finding that the union could respond to. I'm delighted to see that you are so deferential to our counsel's office that you think that the fact that they have made a recommendation sort of ends the analysis.
Well, a broken clock does tell the right time twice a day.
As I think you would not disagree, sometimes people disagree with the recommendations of the counsel's office. Sometimes people disagree with the recommendations of the auditors. The auditors did raise a question about this. I don't think that they thought this was a slam dunk. It was our lawyers that did an analysis, and I think, as the chair said, we think there are distinctions between some of the AOs and the facts that are in front of us. That actually there are distinctions in fact that lead to a different legal conclusion on some of our parts, but I am absolutely happy to hear from SEIU on this point. I don't think that the process questions are lightly taken.
Could I ask a question? Where in the regs, though, does it say they need to do what you're suggesting? Even if the AOs don't squarely address the issue before us, that's not really the ultimate question, because the AOs are not the source of the rule. It's, well, the regulations. And the way the regs read, what this union did seems to be wholly consistent with the actual regulatory language. We can't really have them respond to whether or not they come within AOs, because that seems to not really be the question.
Well, I think that the regulation left some room for interpretation, and that's why there was recourse to the AOs.
The regulations require the reporting of the recipient of the expenditure for the AOs when it aggregates over $200. In this matter, as I understand it, SEIU moved the money to SEIU, who then paid the people who were the recipients of those funds. There seemed to be more of an accounting measure, rather, because at that point in time, SEIU couldn't make independent expenditures. They moved the money through the accounts of SEIU and paid locals. As you pointed out, that the money movement to locals is very common. And if they had reported the recipient locals, I would be fine with that. But that's not what happened. They reported a significant, you know, some to the, in one instance, $3 million of a transfer. And then they seemed that carried that forward and then reported some disbursements from that, but never to the recipient, local. If they had reported the locals, I'd be fine with that.
Can I ask a question and tease this out a little bit? because I think the rule has to apply to everyone. Let's say a national party committee transfers money to a state party committee, which then does an independent expenditure. Not as common nowadays, but was very common back in the issue ad days, where they would move a mixture of hard and soft money to a state party and then pay for an issue ad, or they could pay for an IE. They do it all hard. But for whatever reason, they want the state party to do it, or they're funding it. Would they have to? Would the national party then show an IE to the state party's, you know, media production company? Or would it just be a transfer and then the state party would show the IE? Because to me it seems it's like the same kind of national versus local issue.
Except for the unlimited transfer opportunity between national parties, between party committees. So we don't...
But why does that change on the IE side? Because IEs are unlimited. You still have the limit issue doesn't really rear its head in IEs either.
But for IEs, the recipient is SEIU COPE was reporting IEs. They were this is their reporting of IEs.
Right.
And so my concern is they're not reporting the recipient. They're reporting the account through which the money was transferred to the locals.
Okay. Let me try another hypo. Let's say a state party wants to do essentially the same sort of program that this union did, which I'm reading one of the, let's see, what is this? This is a memo from the staff director's side about this, and it says the purpose was, quote, door-to-door voter ID and get out the vote efforts, supporting, in this case, it was Barack Obama and opposing John McCain. So let's say a state party hired a consultant to do the same thing, and they did one IE report that said we're paying consultant X to do an IE, and the description is door-to-door voter ID and get out the vote efforts. Would they have to then break that all down, or is that a sufficient report for the party under the approach you want to impose on this union?
Well, that I think was answered by the Mondale AO. If there's a vendor involved, then that's the recipient of the funds, and you don't have to break down the vendor's individual or specific spending of that IE expenditure.
Then what's the difference between the Mondale AO and the union? Because maybe we're just going to disagree, but I don't see them as particularly distinguishable unless you start treating people differently. And it's odd because you do have to treat people differently to a certain extent because, well, they do things slightly differently, but the rule doesn't change. It has to allow folks to do essentially the same thing the same kind of way, and I'm having trouble seeing why the union would have to break it down but a party committee wouldn't. I guess the local's not the same as a vendor.
In this instance, I think the local is like the vendor.
Well, that would bring you within Mondale, right?
Sorry?
Wouldn't that bring you within the Mondale AO?
Not in this instance, where the money moved from COPE to SEIU, and that's all that's being reported. We're not getting the reporting of the local. As I said, if they were reporting the funds that were the aggregate transfer, the bulk transfer that was made to SEIU, if the funds that were transferred to the locals are being reported, I don't think any of us are talking about individual employees or individual expenditures by the local for every piece of that IE expenditure, but just reporting the transfer to SEIU means that the recipient of the IE is not actually reported.
How would they know to report it that way? I mean, it's just reporting, but I would think the reporting obligations ought to be sufficiently clear that we shouldn't have really this much of a difference in views. How would they know, short of being audited and then having a finding imposed on them, that they're not quite doing it the way some think they ought to do it?
Well, by my reading of the regulation, the recipient is not the is not SEIU. Commissioner McGann.
Thanks. I think one way to move this along, and I hear that not everyone is going to support the report as drafted, but I think it's important to firm that up now, and then once we see how that goes, then we discuss Plan B. I have a couple technical concerns with the report as drafted, and that's on page one, where it has limitations. This is rather standard that the auditor, you know, auditors will limit the scope of their audit. You see this with big accounting firms, so that, you know, when people rely on the audit for company mergers or whatnot, they know the limits of the audit. Here, however, the way these limitations read could be misconstrued down the road and make it look like, well, the auditors really didn't look at $14 million worth of IEs to verify certain things, and therefore it leaves somewhat of a potential cloud. So I would either prefer to just strike it all together or add a sentence that says something to the effect of audit did not discover any material noncompliance, because this kind of language makes me a little nervous. So I'd like to move that we adopt the audit report in front of us, striking the limitations language, and make any technical and conforming changes to remove such language throughout the audit. And we'll see how that goes, and that may end the matter. And if not, then we have to discuss where we go from here.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem that I have with doing it in that order is that I know where it goes from there. If that motion fails, then it goes to additional issues under the, you know, process that we have laid out. And and then there would be no opportunity for somebody else to say, no, we want to do this differently. We want to send it back to audit so that they can propose a new finding that the union would then have the opportunity to respond to. So I guess I would like to make a substitute motion.
I think I'm not sure you're correct that it goes into other issues. That's on proposed findings. This is not a proposed finding. There's no proposed findings, so this doesn't go to other issues. It would just be struck, and the report would be adopted otherwise as it appears. And where it says commission findings, it says that in pertinent part, audit staff did not discover any material noncompliance. So I'm confused by what would drop into other issues.
Yes, I'm going to, because our audit processes seem to be still a work in progress, I'm going to ask counsel for a little bit of guidance. Should this motion fail, will I then have the opportunity to make a motion to send this back to audit to effectively brief this issue for the union so that they can then brief their response back to us?
That would be in order.
All right.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 I'm sorry. One moment. My bad.
Following your lead.
Sorry.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
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 Motion fails 3-3. Are there other motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
All right, I'll give this a try. This is an unusual motion because we find ourselves in an unusual procedural posture. I move that we return this matter to audit in order for them to draft a proposed finding that would reflect that the audit staff identified 38 disbursements totaling $14,427,267 from SEIU COPE to SEIU, which were then dispersed by SEIU on behalf of SEIU COPE to numerous entities for independent expenditures, that SEIU COPE did not adequately itemize and report the recipient individuals and or entities that received payments for the independent expenditures from the account of SEIU, SEIU COPE's connected organization, that due to the lack of itemization of these independent expenditures, audit was unable to verify the dates of the public dissemination for the independent expenditures and the timeliness of any 24-hour or 48-hour notices filed or the use of proper disclaimers for any public communications contained in those expenditures, and that SEIU COPE should amend its reports to correct its reporting. That report would then effectively be back in the interim audit phase. It would be presented to the union for their response, and if they so chose, for ultimately for a hearing, and we would basically be sort of winding the clock back on this audit and returning it to an earlier phase, which I admit is a unusual procedure for us, but I don't know any other way to do it, given that the interim, this issue wasn't, would, had they proposed a finding, it would have been raised to us at the interim audit phase. Since the finding wasn't proposed, we're sort of left at the end of the process with this unresolved issue. And I'm open to other ways of attempting to resolve it, but I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Commissioner Walther?
I just had a question of Mr. Stoltz. I gather that had you not sent it to OGC for an opinion, would there have been a finding by your office to that effect?
And sorry, I missed it.
Had it not been sent to the office, OGC, for an opinion, in your office itself, had you reached a conclusion as to whether or not a finding should be made?
Just given the cover memo on this, I don't think it would come as a surprise to anybody that this question generated quite a bit of discussion at the staff level with both in audit and between audit and OGC as to where this fits. The Mondale AO talks about vendors, and of course the classic deal is we don't care where the printer buys his ink. On the other hand, if you transfer money to your payroll service to do payroll, you have to report who you paid, not the payroll service. So where does this fall? And council spent considerable time and effort researching and came up with a conclusion that's reflected in the cover memo, and so we presented it to you that way. It's an interesting question as to what the necessary disclosure in this sort of case should be.
Thanks.
Commissioner McGann.
I guess I have a question on how this plays out, because I'm not inclined to support the motion for the reason that I don't see the finding materializing in any meaningful way. Meaning, first, I'm still not sure what they're responding to. They seem to be responding to error, not really a proposed finding. Now, I guess the proposed finding is they should have done their reports differently. But why would they not just attach what OGC's prepared and say, see attachment A? And they probably will put some additional argument in there. But it doesn't make sense to keep these folks under the thumb of the audit process. And And I'm not sure what is to be gained by sending it back to them for them to spend more resources preparing a brief and asking for a hearing and all that to persuade commissioners to maybe affirmatively rule in their favor. Is it that we can get four votes to say what they did is affirmatively correct? So there's some interest in doing it this way? Because it's I don't see four votes to make the finding that they did something wrong. So if that's the goal, then it doesn't make any sense to send it back. If it's the goal is that maybe there could be a fourth to come my direction, which is what they did is correct, then there's a balancing over, is that really worth using SEIU COPE as the person who essentially funds the briefing on all that, which is an issue that really the commission ought to be able to do without keeping them under the thumb. So I'm not sure where this comes out. And I guess that's my first question: is there hope that someone moves our direction? If not, then what's the point of going further down the road? And then two, I guess this is for the chair, but probably also for counsel, but. It's in the opinion of the chair, if the current motion goes 3-3, what happens then? Will we close the file, or would we just sit in limbo? Because I'm trying to just play this out as to where this ends up, because I'm not given that I'm not sure what sending it back accomplishes, I'm not sure what. If we just keep going back and forth and going 3-3 and this never gets resolved, I just am curious on how this ends up.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Well, I'll address your first question, which is, you know, is there if you're asking, is my mind entirely made up and closed, and I just feel like making the union's lawyers spend some more time writing a brief? No. I think there's an issue here. I'm not confident that the document that's in front of us has resolved it in the correct way. I think that you have as you have said, and I agree with you on this, it's important to give the union the opportunity. You know, it's one thing to get advice from our lawyers, but they don't have as much invested in this as the union does. Union may come up with different arguments. They may present it differently. I'm always happy to engage with the lawyers on the other side and hear what they have to say. You know, could I be persuaded? Sure. Right now I'm not persuaded that the opposite is true, but you know, could I be persuaded that you're right? Yeah, I think. Sure.
Question again.
What's awkward is we've put in place a procedure where if there's going to be a finding, the committee that's been audited has an opportunity to be heard, so at least we know what they would prefer. I could see this particular union going one of two ways. They may say, just close the file and let us go. Or they could say, actually, even if it doesn't mean we have four votes saying what we did was correct, we wouldn't mind an opportunity to drop a letter in the file saying we think we're absolutely right. So that way, at least we're on the public record, we have a statement that says we don't think any of this adds up to anything and we're completely in the clear. I mean, they may want to do that to have their own bite at the apple. Sometimes you see, it's more common in MERS, where a MER will close and someone will send a letter wanting to put it on the public record because they feel like they weren't, you know. And I think that there's cases. I think there was one years ago. You were a defense lawyer, and you sent such a letter.
I did.
And so sometimes.
Wow, you read it. I'm impressed.
And Susan Bass Levin, was that the respondent? Was it that case?
Could have been.
New Jersey. She ran against Jim Saxton in 2000, I believe.
I remember Ms. Levin. I can't swear that was the case, though.
May have been. I don't know. I didn't look that up before the meeting. That was just
very impressive.
That was just off the cuff. So we're sitting here, and we have folks I recognize, not not because we run in the same circles, but because they do business before the commission, who are the folks being audited. And we can't ask I would love to ask them, do you want another bite at the apple to clear your name, or do we just or do I hold the line here and just and say let's just close the file? So I don't know if it'd be in order to ask the chair. Can we ask them? Can I move if we have four votes? Ask them what they would want to do, because it, procedurally we've put in a position we're in a position where we thought we fixed this problem, where we sit here and we watch them, and we can't talk to them. It's bizarre, and we fixed this, and now here we are, and we're back in Alice in Wonderland where we have this divide. My guess is they may say put us out of our misery, but they may want to file a letter.
Commissioner Walter.
Well, you've got four votes to ask them what they want to do.
Well, I think, if I might, I think what would be in order is often in this, we don't have a procedure where we, like in AOs, where we ask representatives of the interested party to sit at the table. What we do in often in audit is relay information through the auditors. The auditors receive information, as we did this morning, received it. So what may be in order, and I think I'd ask Mr. Calvert this, is if the commission took a recess and the auditors consulted with the audited committee and were able to transmit that information. We just don't have a procedure.
I understand. And that's why I was asking what the chair thought would do. You're the chair. So as I understand it, we recess, the auditors turn around and ask the guys in the front row, who then tell the auditors who turn back around and tell us.
That's my question for Mr. Calvert, if
okay,
that would be
right.
In order.
Game of telephone.
Yes.
That would be in order.
Thank you. So the commission will recess for 5 minutes. The open meeting will resume. Mr. Hintermeister? Oh, Mr. Stoltz is coming back.
The committee has indicated to me that they agree with the conclusion of the memo and the legal basis that was represented in that memo. They believe that it was a fair question to bring to the table, and they don't believe that a finding would be warranted in the report and don't see the basis for going back to the interim report stage. The committee did indicate that they would like to see some sort of rulemaking from the commission in the future, and they would be happy to be involved in that process and would follow any guidance that would be come out of that rulemaking. And they wanted to make sure, and the, just the legal basis, that there is no regulation out there that indicates that any further disclosure was warranted in this case.
So that's a no, I think, to Commissioner McGann's question.
Plus, they don't understand what would be gained by sending it back to the...
Right, I understand that.
So I believe there is a motion on the table to send it back to the interim audit stage to present this proposed finding and follow the procedures that would flow from that stage of our process. Are there any questions on the motion? Any discussion? Commissioner McGann.
So my motion was supplanted by Commissioner Weintraub. So Commissioner Weintraub's.
I believe we voted on your motion.
You did. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
You can remember my clients from 20 years ago, and you can't remember the
and
motion.
And I misspoke. It was actually
ago?
Tierney. It was. I had the wrong merge. It was a self-funding issue. Sorry, I misspoke.
Yes.
Wrong merge.
So the motion is no. Is there any further discussion of the motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails 3-3. Are there any further motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
We've been talking about this. I think. Well, let me ask counsel, because we could do a couple of things here. There is a finding in the report that was presented to us that audit staff did not discover any material noncompliance. Now, I don't know whether my question for our counsel is, does the rejection of Commissioner McGann's motion mean that this issue automatically goes to additional issues in the actual final report that would be the next stage in this process, or if I wish to have this issue discussed in additional issues, do I have to make a separate motion to reject the commission finding that is in this report? I'm happy to do that, but if I don't have to, that's fine too.
Mr. Calvert?
I think our conclusion is, and I do want to caveat this a little bit, but I think our conclusion is that you wouldn't need to make an additional motion. I would note that that there was an additional part to Commissioner McGann's motion. It was not merely to approve the report, but was to approve the report with a modification relating to the language about the scope limitation. But the applicable provision of the commission directive states that for any recommended finding that does not receive four or more votes, either approving or rejecting the recommendation, the audit division will move the discussion to an additional issues section. Each additional issue will contain a brief summary of the facts, any applicable legal standards, a brief recitation of the audit division's recommendation, and a statement describing the commission's discussion of the issue, and a recitation of the vote on the recommended finding. We would be in a situation in which the recommended finding, which is that there was no material noncompliance discovered on the part of the committee, would not receive four or more votes, either approving or rejecting the recommendation. So it would appear that the thing to do at that point would be to move the discussion into an additional issues section.
Okay. Well, in that case, although I would have welcomed further briefing and conversations with SEIU on this, if, you know, I understand it's their choice to just close the door. That's their option. I move that we reject the finding in the audit report of SEIU. In front of us.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails 3-3. At this point, it's my understanding that the audit report will go back to the audit division for further drafting.
Is
there
correct.
Any further procedure we need to take at the table here today?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you very much.